Welcome back to the Expert Witness Playbook Podcast. Today's episode is one I think a lot of physicians are going to relate to because we're talking about the stage of expert witness work that almost everyone starts in, but nobody really explains. Most doctors picture expert witness work as depositions and trial testimony, but the reality is that before any physicians ever step into the courtroom, there's a long period where we're building experience, building relationships, and learning how cases actually work. Today, I want to talk with someone who's right in that place. Dr. Gary Mack is a board-certified pediatric hospitalist and general pediatrician. He trained at NYU Langone Hospital, Long Island, and has been a full-time pediatric hospitalist for 8 years. First in the Mount Sinai Health System and now at Episcopal Health Services in New York. He's attended over 1,000 high-risk deliveries, teaches residents and medical students, is a neonatal resuscitation program instructor, and serves as editor-in-chief of the Pediatric Hospital Medicine Division at Stat Perls. Gary has been doing medical legal case review and consulting, and like many physicians entering this field, he's building towards deposition and trial testimony, but hasn't yet had that opportunity. I actually think this is a really valuable place to learn from because this is where most of us as physicians will spend our first several years in expert witness work. So Gary, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So for listeners who don't know pediatric hospital medicine well, tell us what a typical day looks like for you.
So I work in community hospitals ever since I graduated from residency. So usually there's only one pediatric hospitalist on at any given time. So I would go to high-risk deliveries. I would take care of babies in the newborn nursery. I would also cover for level 2 NICUs at night. During the day, there's a neonatologist in-house, but at night, usually
okay. So at night, you're there, intubations, deliveries, you're the neonatologist at night.
Yep, exactly. And then I would go down to the ER for consultation, pediatric consultations, and I take care of patients on the pediatric floor. So it's different places that you have to cover for.
Kind of a wide breadth of attending deliveries, going down to the ER. I did, like, when I was in fellowship, I did moonlighting at night as a peds hospitalist. Yeah. And I remember it's hard work because you feel like you get pulled in like 7 different directions. You know, you might be down in the ER seeing a really sick kid, and all of a sudden the pager, what used to be the pager, probably your phone goes off, and then you're being called to a stat C-section. And tell me a little bit, let's shift gears just a little bit, your Stat Perls editor role. Tell me a little bit, I don't know a lot about that. And tell me a little bit about what that role as editor entails.
Okay, so basically I am looking through Stat Perls question bank for the pediatric hospital medicine section. I go through each and every single one of those questions. I look at the question stem and also the answer choice and the distractors. And I'm supposed to basically make sure everything works well. And if there are distractors that are too easy and nobody is picking those distractors, I would have to switch out those distractors and put a better distractor in there. So to make the question more challenging, I also write the explanations for each question as well. And in addition to that, I also look at outdated articles on topics, and I edit them, I update them, and then I, push it through the peer review process within the organization.
Cool. Yeah, it's really giving back to the community as far as, keeping people up on what's new and everything. So let's make a transition, and we'll talk now about sort of what got you into medical legal work and kind of how things have been going from that standpoint, because that's really what Expert Witness Playbook is all about, is helping others, kind of giving back and helping others. So how long have you been doing this? Like, tell me a little bit about what got you started, like why you started, like, and those sorts of things.
Sure. So I got started about 3 months ago. Now, you know, throughout the years, I've been asked by the hospitals that I work for to do internal case reviews for them. However, I would say the majority of them are not pediatric related. So last fall, I started looking online, you know, looking for opportunities for any independent pediatric case review opportunities. And I stumbled upon the SEEK expert witness directory. And then I started clicking on the website a little bit, and I found out that they actually offer courses on how to get started as expert witnesses that also offer CME credits. So I just decided, hey, why not give it a try? And I took the course, I liked it, and I decided I wanted to, you know, give it a try.
It's kind of a a mini law school for physicians, at least, you know. I took it at the very beginning. I think I took it, you know, gosh, over 15 years ago, and found it really good. Yeah. So you've had some cases, right? You've people have reached out, how are things going as far as you're getting a few cases, you've been able to review them. Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, so far I enjoy doing this work. I've gotten 6 cases so far, and there's a good mix of plaintiff and defense cases in there. I just find it meaningful to help prevent meritless cases from going forward and holding substandard care that cause harm accountable. And besides that, it is very intellectually stimulating to, you know, just look through the whole case from start to finish and try to identify any breaches, if there are any breaches that cause a harm.
So you've had what I would say, you know, because there's three sort of places where we can give opinions: standard of care, causation, and damages. Are you mostly doing standard of care or causation, or kind of tell me about, I don't want to hear about specifics of cases, but just sort of in general, are you, what sorts of things are you opining on?
So I think so far, only one case they're asking me for standard of care. All the other cases, they are all wrongful death cases, and they are asking me for both, you know, standard of care, if there's any breaches that led to the damages.
Okay. That caused the damages. Yeah. Kind of a combo of standard of care and causation. And are you finding, so you're connected through SEEK. Are you, do you have a website? Do you have, like, what other things, ways are you trying to connect? What's your secret sauce?
No secret sauce. So it's just the listing on SEEK, plus you know, making connections and networking with people on LinkedIn. So when I first started, I you know, got myself listed on SEEK, and then I started becoming more active on LinkedIn. I started connecting with expert witnesses. I started connecting with LNCs and also medical malpractice lawyers, just introducing myself, you know, what are my expertise, and that I'm open to doing expert witness work. Okay. I don't promise them outcomes, you know, nothing like that. And that's what I learned from SEEK. Like, you're not supposed to be, you know, sales pitchy, you know?
Exactly. I think you brought up LNC, just for listeners, that's a legal nurse consultant. I think that's a great thing that our listeners should hear, is that legal nurse consultants are sort of the behind-the-scenes warriors in a lot of these cases, and they often will be, I would say, picking experts or helping the attorneys find experts. So I think that's a really super important, and we haven't really talked about that on the prior shows, but getting connected with legal nurse consultants is definitely an avenue. Networking in general is so important. I assume you're keeping track of all the attorneys. I tell people, keep track of everybody that contacts you so that you can kind of every once in a while, reach out, let people know, sending a group email, not spamming people, but just group email to the people who would be interested, the people you've worked with, the people that have contacted you. I always start that spreadsheet and keep growing it over the years. So if you're not doing that already, I would definitely recommend doing that.
Yeah, I am doing it. And another thing I wanted to add is whenever a lawyer reaches out to you, just be responsive, be reachable, be professional. When you're opining on a case, just be neutral. Don't promise any outcomes. Like, don't worry about like which side they're on. Just be neutral. If you're being retained by plaintiff's attorney, when you're opining the case, make sure you opine the same way you would have if you were retained by the defense side as well.
Absolutely. I think, that's so important. And that's gonna lead to more work over the years because people are going to know that you are that you're honest, that you that you're giving a and you're giving the same opinion whether you're on one side or the other. I think that what most attorneys want, no matter what side they're on, they want to know the truth, and they need to really understand what's going on. And these cases are really expensive, whether they're on the side prosecuting, on the plaintiff side, or defending. They just want to know the truth. And I think we've talked about this on prior episodes, but making sure you're not an advocate for either side is so important. Tell me, what has anything, maybe nothing has, but has anything surprised you about reviewing cases? After you started reviewing things, you're like, I didn't know that, or any sort of like surprises or things you didn't expect?
Yes, so there's this one case. It is a very medically complex kid, with multiple comorbidities, and during the night of the event, there's a lot of documentation, and it's just all over the place, in the chart itself. It's all over the place. There's like flow sheets with multiple rows that extend from page 1 to page 10, and then you always have to scroll back up to find out what time what happened. Getting used to looking at records, that's surprisingly hard. Like, it is a very complex task, and it's very time consuming. Another thing that surprised me was that how one little detail tucked away in a chart can cause a whole paradigm shift in the whole case. Also, and the third thing is that when you scroll down in the medical records, there's usually some handwritten medical records. For example, there was one case that I was looking through that, it didn't seem like there's any breaches in standard of care, until I scroll all the way down, to the last couple of pages where there was a sitter that was sitting in the room documenting exactly what happened every 15 minutes. And there's like a huge discrepancy between what the sitter was documenting versus what the nurses and what the doctors were documenting. So that's also, something very surprising to me.
Yeah, I think being detail oriented and really looking at everything. I totally agree with you. There was a case years ago where a single blood pressure reading in the middle of the night, where with this hypertension and bradycardia in this child that had increased intracranial pressure, and it sort of changed everything. That was the point. And without finding that blood pressure tied with that bradycardia, that Cushing's triad, as we talk about. As far as have you, I think one of the hardest things is being able to tell an attorney no, or that they don't have that. I think that's hard to do. And what have you found sort of, I assume in the cases you've got, at least some of them, you're on a side where you're like, my opinion's not going to support your side of the case. Has that happened yet?
So it's going to happen tomorrow.
Okay.
So,
All right.
yeah, I've been asked to opine on a case on the standard of care in a wrongful death case. They're asking me to review the hospital records to see if, do these, signs and symptoms should these signs and symptoms have let the doctors in the hospital pursue further testing for this very, very rare cause of said such signs and symptoms. And no, the answer was no. Okay, so I review all the records. I review the outpatient records. I review the records after hospitalization. And my opinion is no. There's no breaches in the standard of care in this case. And that's what I'm gonna tell them tomorrow.
Let me give you some my own. I've done it a lot of times. Let me give you my own take on how I do it. When I have to do that, I come right out of the gate. The first sentence I say is, "I want to be upfront with you. I'm not going to be supportive for your case." Get that out there right from the start, okay? And because then it's not sort of your drip, 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 and then lead to the conclusion. I start with the conclusion, and then the second thing I say is, I'm going to tell you all the reasons why I would want to be on the other side of this case, and why, and just be very straightforward. I would say writing out your reasons and having it ready to go, and be ready for somebody to try to change your mind. Because sometimes you're going to get an attorney and they're really good at questions, and they may try to change your mind, and you just can't. You know what I mean? Yeah, because obviously your heart's not in it. And I've had times, I've never had my mind changed, but man, attorneys can be really good. They'll ask you this question. But what if this was this and this with this? Would this change? So lead with the bad news, I say. Lead with the no, and then discuss why you would destroy this case if you were on the other side. And good attorneys want to hear what you're saying. They want to hear no because they know you're being honest, and they're not going to end up spending $100,000 on a case that's not going anywhere. So, well, good luck on that tomorrow.
Thank you.
That's going to be an important conversation, but I think it's going to give you a lot of growth too, if that's your first time doing that. As far as let's shift gears again. So you're probably thinking down the line to depositions at some point down the line, because these cases take forever. And as far as excited, nervous, or what are your feelings on, have you ever been deposed before for anything?
No.
Okay. So it's certainly a unique experience if you haven't done it before, but
Yeah. A few lawyers that I've been working with,
yeah.
they promised me they're going to prep me. So I'm looking forward to
Absolutely.
it.
And the things that I often tell new people is if a lawyer does not want to prep you, that I won't go into a deposition without a thorough preparation session. Sometimes it's many hours. And I want to know a couple of key things. Beforehand, I want to make sure I have all the records. So I will often send a list back and say, this is everything I have. Please confirm that I have everything in this case, and that I'm not missing anything because this list is what I have. And then I want to know sort of where they think the cross-examination is coming. You know what I mean? What the other side's strategy may be, or what they feel like the other side's strategy. Because you may not know sort of the whole case. You're kind of in your own lane and you really understand, but seeing the big picture can be really helpful. Can be really helpful in understanding the deposition. I always tell people it's take breaks. I usually take a break every hour, stretch, get a drink of water or coffee, don't it, some of these can go on for a long time, and don't do it without some breaks and things.
I'll keep that in
But
mind.
yeah, preparation is super. I mean, you're the one in the room who knows everything about the case. You've studied it. The best analogy I use is treat it like a final exam in medical school or college, where you just you. A final exam that's an oral examination by somebody who does not want you to do well. That's really the bottom line is you're being cross-examined, so you want to make sure you know the facts. It's an open book exam because you can have stuff in front of you, but you really the key stuff you want to have in your head, and really understanding at a level that goes even beyond where you think the deposition is going to go, like understanding everything about the case that you can is the preparation is everything.
Yeah, I've been asked to, I've been told that I should ask my retaining counsel, if they know about the strategies or if they've come into contact with the opposing counsels in the past. To try to extract as much information about the opposing counsel before I go into the deposition.
Yeah, different people have, different people have different ways that they do depositions. Some people are there and they just want to know your opinions. They're going to go in, they're going to hear what your background training experience and try to understand sort of that, and then they're going to dive right in, get your opinions, dig into them, really poke around and make sure you're solid on your opinions and get out. Some people, like I say, it's they are going after sound bites. So sometimes they don't even get all your opinions. They're going to ask you questions, a case where somebody got hurt and they're just going to say, yes, this person had a traumatic brain injury. Don't you agree? And there's some stuff that you just have to agree. And so they're building all these little sound bites, as I call it. Other people I have found are going to test your stamina, and they're going to just see how long you can go and for hours on end, and to see if towards the end they can sort of break you as far as like if you're so tired and you just want to be done, and after multiple hours that you'll give in certain areas. And then that's probably some of the major ones. The other one that I see is the good cop, bad cop. They start out super friendly. Right before you get started, they're chatting you up. They're really nice, and they'll start out, and then the screw gets turned, and then their personality changes as the deposition moves on, and they get very aggressive, and then they start it's wild to see somebody change from that good cop to bad cop, or from very friendly to very aggressive. So there are a lot of different styles you're going to learn over the years, but those are sort of the big four or five styles that I've seen. As far as for those that haven't started, they haven't done anything, maybe give a couple pearls out there to those that are just getting started. If you're looking back and would be able to give yourself some advice from a few months ago, what would you tell people?
Well, I would say that if you have the time, do take the class. Take a class. There are a few vendors out there where you can, take the class and get the basics down. Stuff like what is standard of care? Because it is different in every state. Whenever I get a new case from a different state, I always look up what standard of care means, in that state. Every state, they sort of have a nuanced definition of it, but it is good to find out what it is. In a class, they also would tell you about like Daubert, like what Daubert means, and they should also tell you how much other expert witnesses in the same field are charging, so you don't overcharge or undercharge. So I think taking a class to just get the basics down is it's very important. Other than that, I would say focus on the clinical. Okay, nothing can prepare you more as an expert witness than you being good at what you do. Okay, being
Yeah,
a, you know,
you're the
and
expert.
yeah, exactly. And keep yourself up to date by reading journals, attending conferences, doing your CMEs, and get your CV ready. Update your CV. Know your CV as well, and make your fee schedule. I would just say that, and also, get an eSIM. Okay. Get a separate number for your expert witness work, because nowadays we all get like the spam calls and spam text messages. So if you have a separate number, with a different ringtone, that's going to cue you to not ignore that unknown number. That's going to be helpful in, being responsive to, lawyers looking for experts.
That's a great idea. I've not heard that. So, Gary, that's a big nugget. Nowadays, you can get a couple different phone numbers on your iPhone, right? And so you can have a couple feeds coming in. Yeah, that's yeah. Obviously, having an email address and the responsiveness, that's sort of where I take a lot of pride in my own. Like, I don't think anybody's more responsive than me. Like, I am. That's one of the things, like, and attorneys really appreciate it. It's so often they say, I've worked with this other expert, and I get a hold of them, and they don't get back to me for 4 or 5 days. I was like, 4 or 5 days, and you're paying them, a lot of money for what they're doing, and it's just they're not dedicated to that. They're too busy. And this is not something that you can do if you're completely consumed in your other. You have to have a little bit of flexibility and time for depositions, for reading these very complex cases, and then eventually, trials are going to come up, and you've got those happen bankers' hours Monday through Friday, and if you never have the ability to get out of you know, to block out time Monday through Friday, you shouldn't be in this.
Right.
What is your kind of what's sort of in the horizon? Like, do you have any other things that you think you want to do in order to, I think you're super successful having 6 cases in 3 months. Like, yeah. Whoa, like you are, you're really doing well. I probably didn't have 6 cases in the first 2 years. And so I think you are very much off to the races. Do you have any other plans, like what you're going to do next to try to keep connecting and building your practice and your expert witness practice?
Well, I think I'm just going to be doing what I've been doing, you know, these couple months, because it's been working well for me. I also think that, you know, just because I'm a pediatrician, I'm a pediatric hospitalist, and there are not that many pediatricians out there doing expert witness work. So I become, you know, one of the few ones who do this. So that's why I think that's how I was able to get so many cases in such a short amount of time. Do you have other, you know, input?
I'm not sure how I
got so many cases so quickly.
I think it's, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and, I think just it's going to build with time, and we may be talking back in this podcast a few years from now, and you'll be able to talk about all the trials and the depositions that you've done and those yeah. sorts of things.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking we're probably getting closer towards the end. Is there anything else you think listeners would want to know, or a story or a nugget of information that would be helpful for those starting out?
Yeah. So I want to go through some don'ts, you know, because we went through the do's and the don'ts would be to really not trash talk patients or hospitals on social media, because that's going to damage your credibility, you know, when it comes time for deposition or trial. And also don't overstate your expertise. Okay. You know, I know that there are overlaps of expertise, but just don't overstep it. You know, for example, I do ER consults. I go down to the ER to do consults. Okay. But I'm not a pediatric ED doctor. I'm not a PEDS EM person. Okay. So if it's a case about a standard of practice from a pediatric EM doctor, and they're reaching out to me, I'm going to say, no, I can't. Okay. Another area of my practice that overlaps is that I take care of babies in the NICU. Okay. So there are neonatologists, and I take care of babies in the level 2 NICU. Okay. That means I take care of babies that are older than, you know, gestation age is older than 32 weeks and weighing more than 1500 grams. Anything below that, I don't touch. Okay. So I don't overstep my expertise.
You might have to resuscitate a baby if they came in a 28 weeker. If you would have experience resuscitating a 28-weeker, you know, if you're the only one there, you're intubating and putting in lines and stuff and being the first person. But they're getting sent off to a higher level neonatal intensive care unit is what you're saying.
So let me give you an example. So last week there was a lawyer who called me regarding a baby that was, they didn't tell me the gestation age yet. Okay, so they just started telling me about the case. The baby stayed in the NICU for 1 month, and then within 2 days of discharge, the baby died. And they wanted me to look through the charts to see if there are any breaches of standard of care. in discharging this baby when they discharged the baby. Excuse me, I misspoke. The baby stayed in the NICU for 5 months. So, and then I asked him, what was the gestation age of the baby when the baby was born? They said, it was a 30-weeker. And then I was like, so I can't take this case because I don't take care of babies that are less than, 30 weeks gestation. If a baby was born at 30 weeks, they must have gone to a level 3 NICU. So I knew right then and there I cannot take this case. So,
Kind of
yeah.
knowing your lane and staying in your lane,
Exactly.
keeps you
Yeah,
from being. Go
right.
ahead.
And don't compromise on your opinion and be neutral and tell it like it is. And don't argue with people on LinkedIn posts. I see this a
Oh my
lot.
goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, LinkedIn is an interesting, it's an interesting beast.
Yeah. If you want to argue with people, like argue on the phone, don't leave a paper trail. Yeah, so these are what I would advise, new expert witnesses starting out.
Well, I think we covered a lot of ground today, Gary, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule and meeting with me and being a guest. I hope we stay in touch. Tell me how things are going, reach out, and I probably will put you on my put you into my every once in a while I'll send out emails to everybody, just letting people know what's going on or what's going on in my life and things. So I'll keep reaching out to you, and I look forward to and if a case comes along where they're asking for a pediatric hospitalist, I know who to call. I've
Thank
got your
you.
number. Absolutely. Absolutely. So Gary, I really appreciate the conversation because it highlighted something important. Expert witnesses work isn't something you suddenly step into at trial. It's a process. It's built case by case, relationship by relationship, opinion by opinion. I think a lot of physicians will recognize themselves in your early stage of the journey. Thanks again for coming on the show. And to our listeners, if you found this helpful, share it with a colleague who's been thinking about expert work but doesn't know where to start. This is the Expert Witness Playbook. We'll see you next time.